Pluto, Hades, and if it was the 12 Greek gods, then I would have more truck with it, because the Greeks were... They didn't pretend not to be human in their appetites and in their capriciousness and in their unreasonableness. They didn't present themselves as being all-seeing, all-wise, all-kind, all-beneficent. Because the god who created this universe, if it was created by a god, is quite clearly a maniac. Utter maniac. Totally selfish. Totally. We have to spend our life on our knees thanking him? What kind of god would do that? Yes, the world is very splendid, but it also has in it insects whose whole life cycle is to burrow into the eyes of children and make them blind. They eat outwards from the eyes. Why? Why did you do that to us? You could easily have made a creation in which that didn't exist. It is simply not acceptable. So, you know, atheism is not just about not believing there is a, not believing there's a God, but on the assumption that there is one. What kind of God is he? It's perfectly apparent that he is monstrous, utterly monstrous, and deserves no respect whatsoever. The moment you banish him, your life becomes simpler, purer, cleaner, more worth living, in my view.
Stephen Fry, he certainly didn't miss and hit the wall in relation to his answer to Gabe Byrne about if you go up to the pearly gates and you discover there is a God, how will you feel? What will you say? Utterly monstrous was one of the terms he used. He also made reference to God as being an utter maniac. 90-333-105. You can let us know what you think. Let me speak to the Reverend David McElveen from the Free Presbyterian Church. Reverend McElveen, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
When you listen to someone speak about God, obviously you believe in God, and I would go as far as to say the majority of people listening to this programme believe in God. How does it make you feel that someone describes him as an utter maniac, someone who's totally selfish?
Well, I must confess that when I first heard Mr. Fryer's comments about God, I felt in my own mind a sense of righteous anger. The language that he uses to describe God remains, in my view, sinful, iniquitous, and indeed wicked. But the more I thought about his concept of God, the more I recognized that here is a man who is deceived by his own hypocrisy and blinded by his own perverted prejudice to believe that there is no God, and then to proceed to create a God of his own imagination, and then to express such hostility against his imaginary God, to me identifies a man who is at war with himself, and also a person who, according to the scriptures, is in danger of committing the unpardonable sin. And therefore I feel that Mr. Fryer, as an individual, ought to be the subject of our pity and not our hatred. For in his apparent arrogancy, he has changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image like to corruptible man. Twice in the book of Acts, the warning is issued concerning the danger of fighting against God. And I would say to Mr. Fryer and to others who think as he thinks, God is under no threat by any insignificant specimen of humanity, including myself or indeed Mr. Fryer.
Just in relation to the unpardonable sin that Stephen Fry makes that you make reference to him him going as far as committing or about to commit the unpardonable sin. Well, what is that sin?
The unpardonable sin is simply attributing to God the works of evil. And whenever we read this in Matthew chapter 12, we are told that that is the one sin that cannot be forgiven. Now, it's not for me to make the judgment that Mr. Fryer has committed that sin, but it certainly is my view that he is in danger of committing that sin. And therefore, he is the subject of pity as far as I am concerned, and not the subject of resentment and of hatred. I feel sorry for him that he has taken the view that he has taken.
Of course, you're speaking as someone who richly believes in God. Stephen Fry doesn't believe in God, so therefore he doesn't believe in the concept of sin or unpardonable sin. He would understand the difference between right and wrong. That's an entirely different thing. However, he wouldn't be worrying about blemishes on his soul. And he makes a couple of points. He says he would say to God, why bone cancer in children? What's the answer to that?
Well, the subject of human illness has many times been used to question the existence of God, and no one could not be moved by the news of a child or an adult afflicted with a cancerous disease. But again, when you read God's word, you are confronted with the reality that as soon as we are conceived, we all become the subject of death. And there is nothing in the Bible to indicate when that day will be. It may happen in childhood, in adolescence, or even in adulthood. But the challenge that I face as a minister of the gospel is to concentrate very much upon that part of us that will never die. And God breathed his breath into man, and man became a living soul. There is a part of all of us that will not die. If the heart stops beating, if the lungs stop breathing, the soul continues to live on. And that's why the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ is so important, that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life.
Yes, but you make a strong point there with regards to he allowed his Son to suffer. But does that not feed into this argument from Stephen Fry, where he makes reference to him being utterly monstrous, totally selfish, that Stephen Fry is painting some sort of God that was getting, for want of a better term, a kick out of watching his own son suffer, watching other parents' sons and daughters suffer, and he's laid out a very difficult path for people to get to this reward that you have to go on your knees to get, as Stephen Fry said. He's painting a picture of a puppeteer who is, for want of a better term, cruel.
That is because he doesn't know God. And in fact, Stephen Fry doesn't maybe appreciate the fact that his comments are really described and defined in the Bible, as we read in Romans 1, that he changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. You know, so it's not an uncommon thing for a man to describe his concept of God in that way. But why does he do it? He does it because men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds are evil. He doesn't want God to be part of his life, to challenge his life, to convict his life. And when, you know, you make reference to the fact, Frank, that he is not troubled about the unpardonable sin, the Bible makes it clear that it is possible for a man to have a conscience seared with a hot iron. In other words, he becomes insensitive to his conscience. And that's why I feel very, very sad for Mr. Fryer today. It'd be very easy for me to come and to be exceedingly hostile towards him. I pity him today because he's a man in great need, a man in conflict with himself, who is saying on one hand there is no God, and then he develops this concept of a God that he perceives as an imaginary. That to me is a very sad indication of a man who really is struggling with himself. And I know there'll be many people who'll be praying for him today, that his eyes will be spiritually opened and that he'll see the light of God's word.
Okay, Reverend David McElveen, thank you for your commentary this morning. Thank you.
You
can let us know what you think. 90-333-105. No surprise, Reverend McElveen's commentary would be of a biblical style and stance. And everything that he's saying, do you totally understand his arguments? Do you totally are you in tandem with the references from the Bible? You can let us know. 90-333-105. Robin has a point to make. Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Very well, sir. Go ahead.
Well, Frank, I feel very sorry, just like the Reverend McElveen, for Mr. Fry. I do believe, you see, Frank, that being a Christian myself, that it all depends on our worldview, where we start from. And as a Christian, I start from the Bible, and I believe that God created the world. He created it in 6 days. And on the seventh day, he rested. He gave to his first created being, the man, Adam, that command not to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Adam and his wife Eve, they disobeyed God. And as a result of that, sin came into the world. And sin, Adam and Eve being our first parents, the first man, the first woman, that has passed down through the generations to you and I today.
Okay, so let's accept that there is sin in the world for a moment. Why is there horrific heartache for parents with ill children? What has that got to do with sin?
Well, I believe that's not God's fault. Sin is our fault. God created a perfect world. Adam was born with a perfect genome. His DNA was perfect. He could have lived forever. But as a result of his sin, death came into the world. And as death came into the world through one man, so we can be reborn.
Yes, but why then did God create, as Stephen Fry said, insects that their only life cycle is to burrow into the eyes of children to make them blind? There are little insects. You hear about them there when you do these programs about fundraising for Africa. It's a specific insect. That's all it does. That's all it's on Earth for. Why did God develop that insect?
Because not only did man sin, the whole of creation, as a result of that, came into that imperfectness, as it were, again. And through the genetic processes down through the years, I believe that the DNA, etc., changed, mutated, etc., and unfortunately, these things came into being.
Okay, but why did God allow Adam and Eve to sin? Why did he allow that to happen if he wanted a perfect world? Because he would have known what it was going to lead to.
I cannot question God nor his decisions. God is God. God is the one who created the whole world. He's the one who created man in his own image. And it wasn't God who sinned. It was man who sinned. So therefore, we can't blame God. We can only blame but ourselves.
Okay. Robin, thank you for that. Gareth has a point to make. Gareth, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Gareth.
Frank, as an atheist myself, I fully agree with what Stephen Fry said. And I think these comments from people who believe in God are ignorant, condescending, cheeky. And it really underlies the fact that they think that we as atheists are stupid. And there's a couple of points I'd like to make in terms of what the Reverend was saying and what your previous caller was saying. They are saying that, you know, we don't know God and these people don't know God. Listen, I've been in religion. I've read the entire Bible. I've read the Old Testament in its entirety twice. I've studied texts of it. I've believed in God. I've read the New Testament about 7 or 8 times, and it just doesn't add up. That is my point. And this whole point about you have to read a book to know a God, and that this God's all-knowing, all-wise, and all the rest of it, no, doesn't stack up. And also the fact that people are saying, you know, God created man and man sinned, and now it's our fault. God sounds like a tyrannical supervisor, throwing the blame back on his workers, saying, no, it's not our fault. We didn't do that. It's your fault. You didn't do it, or you did do it. Not a load of utter rubbish.
So your point is that you're not setting out to criticise some form of horrific God. You're simply saying there is no God to direct criticism at.
What I'm saying is, if there is a God out there, if there is a God, and I'm open to the discussion and the debate, and I'm open to looking at science, and I'm open to being reasonable, if there is a God out there, I don't see how that God can be a personal God who loves us and he treats us as a father or a mother or a brother or a sister or a friend. I just don't see it.
So what about the God that brought his only son, or allowed his only son to go into the world to die for our salvation, to rise from the dead, to ascend into heaven, to open the gates of heaven to all of us, that when we die, we will have eternal reward and eternal salvation? That sounds like a rewarding God.
Yes, and whenever I first got into Christianity, you know, that was a very, very beautiful concept. Someone who was willing to sacrifice, someone who was willing to lay their life down for me. It made me feel very special in terms of reading that and going, wow, this guy actually did this. So whenever I matured and got older and read the text and, you know, thought about it over many years, I thought to myself, hold on a second, this God is all-powerful and all-wise. There shouldn't be the need for that. There shouldn't be the need for any of these books. There should be one faith, not Muslims, Christians, Hindus, all the rest of it. There should be one faith, and everybody should know. And the effort that God makes to steer us on the right path, the reverend and the previous, that's effortless.
Okay, Garth, we got your points. The line's cracking a little bit towards the end, but it's crystal clear that you're very much in hand with Stephen Fry on this. And Mick has a point. Mick, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Mike.
Well, no specific point. What I want to say is this, that I don't believe in God. Full stop. God, to me, religion is a superstition. And, you know, as I was brought up in a strict Catholic household and was educated by Christian brothers, I need say no more. But through my life, I've come to the conclusion that...
Well, just on that, I'm going to say this because when you say you were brought up by in a strict Catholic household and you were educated by the Christian brothers, I need say no more. I think it's vitally important to remind people that there are thousands of young fellows who were educated by the Christian brothers who have a very fond memory of going through a Christian brothers school. I just think to balance it, that is worth pointing out.
Yeah,
your experiences were negative, but go ahead.
Well, yeah. not all negative, but what I'm saying is that the Catholic Church was drilled into. That's what I'm saying, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church, the teachings of the Catholic Church were drilled into, right? That's beside the point. The point I'm making is this, that I don't believe through my own. I've come to the conclusion through my. I mean, I'm 63. I've come to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. Now, that doesn't mean that you need a. I need a God to get on with my daily life. I get on quite happily through my life. I mean, look, give you a perfect example. I was driving a lady down the road one day. I'm a taxi driver, and it was a Monday morning, and she was a bit hungover. Not hungover. She was tired. She said she'd been at a retreat all weekend, and I just happened to say, yeah, you know, I don't really believe in God. Not just a throwaway comment. Then she sort of turned on me, you know, and what, you don't believe in God? You mean to say that you can go and rape and pillage and kill and all and you're never going to hell? I sort of looked at her, I was sort of incredulous. I said, well, but why would I do that? She didn't understand that. You know, people, I would describe myself as a humanist. I believe in people, not religion. The worst thing I've ever seen was on television one time during the apartheid era, and this right wing, whatever he was, South African, had a Bible in his hand, a big leather bound Bible, and he was a real, he believed in apartheid, and he was waving the Bible about, and he says, if it doesn't say not to do it in this book, then it's okay to do it, and that made my stomach churn. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, but you're using absolute extremities as examples. The woman coming from the retreat. You know, some people who spend a whole weekend on a retreat are driven by the goodness of the serenity of the retreat and the enveloping themselves with regards to the presence of God. And some people who go to retreats are just so extreme within their own mind that you couldn't talk sense to them. So it sounded like as if you got one of the latter as opposed to one of the former. The guy in South Africa is just would use any excuse to discriminate against his black neighbours.
It shows you one example, I'm saying, is the way religion is misused. Listen, I've nothing against religion.
Yeah, it is misused, but should we not be concentrating on how it's not misused as opposed to focusing on those who do abuse religion?
Look, the point I was trying to get across to you was this. I don't believe in God. That's all I was trying to say.
Do you think Stephen Fry was fair in his analysis?
No, I wouldn't have used extreme language like he did. I wouldn't have used extreme language like he did, but the point is, I have as much right as not to believe in God as I have to believe in God. That's all the point I'm getting across.
Okay, that's a very fair point to make. Mick, thank you for that. We'll get to your text, your emails, and your opinions in a moment. 90333105. You can come on the air. You can have a yarn with me anytime here on the Frank Mitchell phone-in.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.